Title of this morning's address is Trust. The word trust has many layers. There's trust in ourselves, trust in other people, trust in the future, and we can think of trusting in God. A writer called Stephen Covey said, "Trust is the glue of life. It is the fundamental principle that holds relationships together." And I think that trust is the glue that holds communities together. People are different in how they trust. It's something we learn from our life experiences. When a child is born, it is totally helpless. It must trust other people to survive. And when adults respond to a child's cry, that's how trust becomes established. And a child who grows up surrounded by trustworthy people is likely to trust others as well. When we trust other people, we do allow ourselves to be vulnerable. If our trust is honoured, the bond with that person is reinforced. But if our trust is broken, the relationship is damaged and it shakes the foundations of our self-belief. At some point in life, life will break our trust. We find ourselves with wondering what on earth we can do. And when trust is broken, we question our judgment. We turn inwards. But if trust is the glue of life, it is important that we learn ways to re-establish trust so that we can go on and live well. Listening to news reports, we constantly hear that today America is a very divided society. But I don't think that that division is exclusive to America. A few years ago, there were protests constantly in France, the Gilets Jaunes protests. The UK was really divided by the Brexit vote. And more recently in Dublin, we saw protests march during the pandemic. These divisions in society, I think, have their origin in where people take their information from. Who do we trust? I know that I'm not alone in having family members who do not share my views about what sources of information are to be trusted. We all have the family members who go to strange places for what they believe, we think, and they think the same about us. Much of what we learned about truth, trust from our parents, and that we in turn taught to our children, has been turned on its head. We were told growing up, never get into a car with a stranger. You need to be very careful about bringing strangers into your home. Be careful of your money, keep it safe. Now we hand over our money with a click on eBay, a tap of the card in the shop. We use Airbnb. I would never dream of giving a stranger the keys to my house, my address, the alarm code, and invite them to sleep in a bed in our home. That's precisely what people do with Airbnb. And the reason they do it is very interesting, and I'll come back to the reason later on. But when you think about it, we just wouldn't give all that information to someone we don't know. And yet, that is what we do. People throughout the world are doing it. And sociologists have been studying the mechanics of this trust and how they have changed recently. Until the 18th century, society learned who they could and could not trust from personal experiences. People lived in small communities, and if someone was untrustworthy, it would be common knowledge. There were consequences for the individual who breached trust. And even at formal levels, this personal knowledge operated. One of the amazing things is we have church records from the Cork Church starting in 1717, so the very early 18th century. And it's a snapshot of how that trust system worked. Say somebody from Dublin was going to stay in Cork, either temporarily or permanently. They would go to the minister in Dublin and get a letter of testimonial to bring to the Cork Church. And these records were filed for reference down there. The letters were assurances of the trustworthiness of the visitor. If that trust was violated, it would be reported back to Dublin. There would be consequences. And there's one account of a young man in Cork who left his lodgings in a clandestine manner, owing rent, and he disappeared up to County Down. The Cork congregation wrote to every minister around the area in Down, telling them what he had done. It was very personal, but there were consequences for people who broke trust. As society has become more urbanized, these personal connections weakened. It just was too complicated. So people needed different ways to keep trustworthiness. So we put our trust in institutions. We trusted banks with our money. We delegated the care of vulnerable people to religious institutions. We trusted hospitals with our health. We trusted solicitors with our legal needs. When you realize how many of those institutions have abused our trust, it's not surprising people are more mistrusting now. And the abuse of public trust is compounded by a lack of accountability. At one time, the local bank manager was a pillar of the community. To work in a bank was a badge of trustworthiness. He works in the bank, you can trust him. In Ireland at one time, the ultimate measure of a successful family was to have a priest or a nun in the family. Back at the financial crash, even as the IMF walked up Kildare Street, the CEOs of banks assured us that the Irish banking system was trustworthy, the foundations were solid. The taxpayer paid dearly for that breach of trust. And not alone was trust broken, but the people who broke the trust, and they did it over and over again, in banks particularly, walked away with their gold-tinted pensions. They weren't just ordinary pensions, they were extraordinarily generous ones. Church scandals are terrible examples of trust betrayed. Trust in medical institutions has been impacted by things like the hepatitis C and the smear test scandals. Politicians are probably the least trusted people who work in public. And it's the lack of accountability that is hurting people the most. Because to make a mistake is human. But when wrongdoing is deliberate, and particularly when it is covered up, our trust is broken, not just in that particular organization, but it calls us to question everything we have trusted in. You know, if one church has a scandal, all churches are called into question. In earlier centuries, trust was based on personal experience. In more urbanized times, we trusted institutions. That fall from grace of many institutions mean that people now look to a variety of sources of information about who they will trust. And of course, the internet is an endless source of information most of it unverified. And someone whose trust in institutions has been broken is easily persuaded down a rabbit hole of misinformation. I find that that examination of how trust, of the practicalities of how trust works, helps to understand people who trust different sources for their information. We can shout at people we disagree with. We can post insults on social media platforms. Or we can use that knowledge to help build bridges between people. And we need bridges, not bunkers. I said earlier I would tell you why Airbnb works, how we have that trust. Why do homeowners in more than 190 countries allow people they have never met into their homes? And the answer is that both the homeowner and the home and the guest publicly review one another. There is accountability. If someone goes into an Airbnb home and wrecks the place, that is broadcast all over Airbnb. They can't do it again. And it's interesting, a further survey has shown that people who use Airbnb sometimes and hotels at other times, almost without exception, say that when they're leaving an Airbnb home, they will tidy it and leave it as they found it. No one ever cleans up the hotel room before they leave it. You don't even dream of making the bed and cleaning the bathroom and folding the towels. It's the accountability that brings out the best in us, let's put it that way. When trust is broken, if the relationship is to be restored, accountability is essential. The one who has broken trust must admit the breach of trust, apologize, and accept that building new trust will take time. What then about trust in God? The thorny one for Unitarians. How we wonder, could we trust something we can't see, hear, hold, or hold to account even? If we trust this old version of God as superhuman, we're bound to be disappointed. The old idea of praying to God to change the weather, that we pass an exam, does not work. That version of God is for child's fairy tales. However, we can trust 100% whoever, whatever originated our universe. We are the inheritors of a world that is teeming with life and beauty. This earth is the Garden of Eden. It is everything we need, not just to survive, but to thrive and to be constantly amazed and delighted. In the book of Job, God asks, "Where were you when I set the foundations of the universe?" Where were we? Because we did nothing to earn the privilege of living in this world. And God never set lines of demarcation of ownership on the universe, on the earth. The earth belongs to humanity, not to a particular race. And we say, but the world is in a dreadful state just now. But who's caused that chaos? With few exceptions, every problem in the world is caused by human beings. Wars, famine, even climate change are the results of human activity. We now understand how earthquakes happen. When there is an earthquake, the first thing we do is rebuild on the fault lines. And then when we say, gosh, God is awful, he knocked down those houses. You know, we are just foolish and foolhardy. Famine and food shortages are not caused by God. They're caused by the unfair distribution of the earth's bounty. We blame God for the destruction we have caused. But we might say, what about illness and death? Now, we didn't cause those. They're surely God's to blame for them. But illness and death are part of the cycle of life. You can't complain about it. To be born means we have to die. It's just things the way they are. It's not a breach of trust on God's part. So we can trust the creator of the universe, but we must take responsibility for our misbehavior. I've talked about trusting other people and trusting God. But what about how we trust or don't trust ourselves? Do we have sufficient self-trust that we live well, or are we filled with self-doubt? Do we allow those doubts to hold us hostage? We don't do anything for fear of making a mistake. We should never fear mistakes, because mistakes mean that we are human and we are doing something, and they are our greatest learning tool. It's how we react to those mistakes and to life experiences that we need to take care of. Part of living life fully is that we hold ourselves to account, that we forgive ourselves, that we learn to trust ourselves again. Sometimes the person we least trust is ourselves. We say, who am I to do something wonderful? Who are you not to? And sometimes we live tightly shut in a ball of self-doubt and barely dare to live. But life is for living. And there is one certainty in life you can trust. Your time on this earth, it is finite. It's far better to risk fully living it than to come to the end of your days and realize you were afraid to live. Amen.